This is Ryan Dedman, Outreach Director with the 911 Training Institute, providing unique mental health expertise and call mastery for dispatchers as the very first responders. You can find the 911 Training Institute on Facebook and Twitter, and visit our website, www.911training.net.
This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon. This is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 168 of Within the Trenches, a podcast based on the experience of being a 911 dispatcher. This episode is sponsored by the 911 Training Institute and is also supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. Now, I am recording from the Embassy Suites in Orlando, Florida, room 418, for the 2018 Standards and Best Practices Conference that Nina holds every year. And this whole week so far has been good. There's been a lot of sessions that I've gone to, and a lot of forward thinkers for the 911 industry. It's been really good. And I've met a lot of people, and I've seen a lot of familiar faces. And one of those familiar faces is my guest today. And his name is Chris, and he's the director with Baron Metcalf Emergency Communication Center. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty good, Ricardo. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Now, you had said something about your communication center, that it was a consolidated but unconsolidated, or how did you put that again?
something in the nature of the most consolidated or the most unconsolidated consolidated PSEP you'll see.
Okay, there you go. And why is that? Well, what does that mean?
It's kind of hard for me to wrap my head around. I've only been the director there since September 25th of last year, so.
That's right. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Shortly after the conference in Kentucky, I took that over. But what I understand is we pull our money together as far as the taxing money from the 911 calls, the cell phone tax, and the landline tax, and we spend the money together as a district, but there are two separate centers.
Okay.
Not sure the reasoning behind that, but you know, it's kind of searching through the weeds to kind of figure that out, but. We took somewhere in the neighborhood of 58,000 calls last year in the Barron County side of it. Mm-hmm. Metcalf's a much smaller, more rural agency, took somewhere in the neighborhood of 8,000. They're technically a secondary PSEP of us. All of the 911 calls come through Barron County, and if it's not an EMS call, then we transfer the call to them.
Oh, okay. But you run them both?
No. No, I have no control, actually, over what goes in that center outside of the equipment.
Oh, okay. Well, because it has the same name. I'm looking at your patch right now, and exactly. It's together.
It's kind of hard to explain, but yeah, it's they're together, but they're not together. So
how's it been going then since you started? I mean, I can only assume that it's been crazy busy, and not just that, but you know, when new power, so to speak, comes into, you know, or new leadership comes in, there's always, you know, learning and trying to not only learn about your dispatchers, but how that center works. You know, how it's worked in the past and kind of working to how you're going to work about with it in the future.
Yes, I come in at a good time. The lady before me, she'd been 32 years there. She was retiring right before we start making this move to Next Generation 911. A lot of the things we talked about this week, and they were needing that shift to go from a traditional PSEP into what we're trying to do now. So the change is welcome. I couldn't ask for a better group of people to come in and take the lead of. They've been very receptive of me. Great group of people, young group of people, though. I was telling you, you know, there's a lot of turnover had happened there. A lot of folks retired, a lot of folks left. Out of 16 full-time dispatchers, I have 8 with less than 4 months experience or so, 4 to 6 months.
Man, yeah,
and the
definitely,
most experience is 20 years.
Definitely a young crew and green.
Yeah, so a lot of my time gets actually spent, if you will, in the trenches with them, in the radio room, actually working. I do a lot of second shift work and a lot of working up till the the third. I'll come in split first and spend a lot of time with the folks, and they seem to enjoy it pretty well. I do spend a lot of time there, but not to micromanage, just to coach right. and mentor.
Well, I think that's a good thing, though, because, you know, when I was still in dispatch, that was one of the things that I loved about our assistant director. If we needed a break or something, and of course, this is if I ever worked during the day, she would go in there and, you know, or sometimes she would just walk in at random and say, does anybody need to use the restroom or get something to eat? You know, I can jump on a console really quick and help you guys out. And I think for everybody that's working there, that's really big. You know, that's a big thing to have someone in that position or across the hall, if you will,
yeah.
on the other side,
yeah.
Who comes in and sits down and works it, because that person knows as well what you're doing, what you're going through. So you also feel a sense of trust with yes. that person where
almost like a family, I would say. In
yeah,
my atmosphere.
Yeah,
my
exactly.
wife spends a lot of time coming in and out of there. She's gotten to know a lot of folks. She's gotten involved in what we're calling the rebranding process. We mm-hmm. were actually getting behind who we are as an agency, what we're there to do.
Yeah.
And getting my folks to buy into that. And they seem to really like that. And that's that pride of being a 911 professional and what it actually means and what you commit yourself to do when you walk through those doors.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, for your part in this, though, how many years have you been in public safety altogether?
This is my 20th year full time.
And then how did you start? How did you get into 911 to begin with?
Funny story. I didn't really get into 911. I needed a job, like most youngsters right out of high school.
I have heard that before.
Yeah, I didn't do well when I tried to go straight out of high school into college. I majored in the wrong things, you know, beer, girls, things like that.
Oh, really, yeah, the essentials.
Yeah, you don't really stay there that long. So after tucking my tail and coming back home, failing out of college, which is miserably embarrassing, had to figure out something to pay for a vehicle, pay for my way around. And my cousin was a deputy sheriff, and that's kind of what I thought I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So he was working part-time at a privately owned ambulance service to pay for a motorcycle. And there were friends of our family that owned that, and he wanted to quit because he got the motorcycle paid for, but he didn't want to leave him in a bind. So he was like, you need a job. They need some help. So it seemed like a perfect fit. I walked in, and I worked there for 2 years part-time and got offered a part-time shift with the 911 center there, and I worked. This is pretty cool. I would go in Saturday at 7 in the morning, mm-hmm. get off Sunday at 7 in the morning, drive across town to 911, work 12 hours, 36 straight.
What?
Off for the rest of the week.
And you said, this is pretty cool?
Yeah. Just it sounded cool, but I didn't realize, you know, I slept for 4 days to recover from that. I was young. So I was thinking,
I wouldn't be able to do that
days.
Now.
I work 1.5 total. And then I've done that for a few years, and the county took over the ambulance service, and that privatized ambulance service kind of died. So when the county took it over and they moved it all into the one dispatch center, I was already full-time there and working part-time at the ambulance service. So those job duties kind of combined into one full-time job.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's a lot of working straight. I think the longest shift I ever worked was 18 hours on Christmas Eve. And the money was good because it was double time and a half.
But oh, yeah.
Not like that, man. You're a savage.
I wasn't smart enough to realize you could get time and a half for things like that. I worked one 24-hour shift for one place and one 12-hour shift for the other. No overtime.
What?
Yes.
You didn't even ask? No. Well, you said you didn't know.
No, I didn't know it.
And nobody said anything.
Nobody said anything. I thought, well, my work week's over. Everybody else is working all week. I'm running around.
Like, we got this guy.
Yeah. That's pretty much what they said. But then when they combined and I lost a 12-hour shift, mm-hmm. and I was doing the 3 days full 12s with them, I lost half my income, so I figured I had to do something. And then that's what pushed me to go to the state police. And then after that, I've done several other things. So
you were working for state police as dispatch then?
Yes.
Okay,
after
so
that, I started there in early 2000. I can't remember the year.
What types of calls were you taking? I mean, at the state police, were you taking, you know, like medicals and fires and all that? Or is it just
very
straight up police?
At the post that I worked at, it varied from post to post. Mm-hmm. Ours were more law enforcement oriented. We did have one county that didn't have a 911 system at all. They used our 800 number, and it was just a mix of calls that you got from there. So for that one small rural county, we would do fire and transfer to EMS. But we were EMD certified, but I don't think I ever used it there.
Okay. See, and that's why I was going to ask, because when I worked in Michigan still in dispatch over in Allegan, our state posts, they didn't do everything. You know, they were just doing just law enforcement. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was wondering if it's the same all over, you know. I was going to ask you next what it was like for you, but it sounds like, I mean, you were loving it, especially the fact that, I mean, when you said it was pretty cool to work those 36 hours.
Yeah, you know, you're in the middle of everything. You don't really know, you don't really understand the liability or the job that you're doing when you're young and you're into that stuff. You're just in the mix of all those things. And right. I really wanted to be a police officer. And I thought, you know, this is my foot in the door. I can meet people, do things. And then a few things happened when I got the full-time position at 911. I really, really was good at doing the job and communicating with people and helping people. And I just stuck. 20 years later, here I am.
Well, and so then I guess, what was your training like then? I mean, you started out, you know, did you do any schooling or anything, you know, EMT wise? Cause I mean, that's how you had started out
they
and then
made
you
us,
switched over
with the, with the private ambulance service, they put on an EMT class and they actually made us attend, but I didn't have to sit for any of the boards or anything like that. I had the learning, but never got certified as an EMT.
Gotcha.
That was
okay.
One of the deals. I was never getting in the back of a truck. Don't like blood. Don't like my own. So, you know, that's one of those things, you know, I don't want to do that. EMS was never really my cup of tea. It was more the law enforcement side of it, but that's how I started, was as an EMS dispatcher. And I told the lady that hired me, I said, On one condition, I don't have to be an EMT and get in the truck. I'll take this class. And that was her deal. You don't have to do the National Registry stuff. You don't have to actually get certified. Just take the class so you can give the medical advice and you know where we're coming from, and then you'll never have to get in a truck. So,
hey, perfect, man.
Worked out well.
No, that's good. So then, you know, what types of calls were you taking? I mean, what were some of the what was one call, I guess, that stuck with you either when you were doing EMS dispatching or when you got into, you know, law enforcement dispatching?
I guess the one with the EMS dispatching that made me realize I was actually doing something, but also made me realize I was doing more than just taking calls and transferring information. I took a call late one night, and it was from a family member who had found their, I can't remember if it was son or nephew, but they had been riding a four-wheeler in the front yard and had accidentally flipped it over, and the handlebars had landed on the person's head. And, you know, I heard that person take their last breath on the phone with me, and that was probably my first serious call. And, you know, I was still green to EMS dispatching, and you know, I knew what to do, what little bit of training I had.
Right.
Because working for EMS, I didn't really have to have the training like we do in Kentucky for other things. You know, we dispatch law enforcement and do other stuff. You have a 5-week academy. But back then, we didn't have that. So it was kind of like this person would teach you on this shift, and this person would teach you on this shift, and you'd have to put together your kind of way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So after weeding through that, I did what I needed to do. I got the ambulance there. I done everything that we could do. But just realizing, you know, I was trying to give the pre-arrivals over the phone and then also talk to someone like they were a human and comfort them while that was going on, plus trying to help them save that person, when realistically in the back of my mind, I thought with what happened and what they're describing to me and what I'm hearing, the sounds that person make, there's no way this person's coming out of this.
Jeez. Now, I have to say this because I think of us as being cool. You know, we've known each other for a little while now.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're a little closer now that you just said that story, because we have one more thing that we can relate to. The first story that I shared for the I Am 911 movement was a story that's almost exactly like yours. You know, I had a call too, where it was a teenage boy who flipped his four-wheeler, and his parents had run out there. And they, when I got the call, they had just taken the four-wheeler off of him, and we started CPR.
Mm-hmm.
But I could hear them. Like, I could hear the crackling of the ribs.
Yeah.
And I could hear them talking about the crackling of the ribs. And I said, you got to keep going. You got to keep going. And I can hear his agonal breathing. And one of the officers ended up keying up, saying that he was out there and you could hear him running. And when he got out there, they said, the officer's here. And they put the phone down. They never hung up. And for whatever reason, I couldn't hang up either. I was just listening. And I could hear the officer saying, come on, buddy. Come on, buddy. And spoiler alert for those who have not yet watched Stranger Things. One of the episodes there, and that show's on Netflix. That wasn't a plug for them, but it's on there just in case. So you know what I'm talking about. There's an episode where the sheriff is out with one of the kids and he's giving him CPR and he's saying, come on, buddy, come on, buddy. And I, oh man, like even right now, yeah, it's, I'm flashing back to it, but that was a trigger for me watching that. So listening to you say that and say it the way you said it, oh, that was a trigger, but that's something that we have in, yeah, relation there.
Oh yeah.
And I've always wondered if I would ever speak to somebody or see something throughout, you know, social media or on my podcast page where people are having similar calls like that. And bam, here we are,
yeah,
with the similar call.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. So, I mean, that's definitely one that can stick with you, but, and I kind of got ahead of myself here on the questions that I had, but do you remember your first call?
No. Not right off. It that was my first bad one. Generally, yeah, I work third shift, so generally what happened there were just minor disturbances, things like that. If the phone rang after 2 o'clock in the morning, it was one of those things where it was either really bad,
yeah,
or somebody was just calling to tell you they were going to be late coming out the next shift. So,
oh, that always sucks too.
Yeah, you pick up the phone, your heart races, you're like, oh man, it's you.
Like, damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
But for real though, on midnight shift, when you get around that time and nothing is coming through, that's the kind of stuff that happens. Yeah, it's one or the other. You know, transfer for something else.
Yeah, or it's bad.
Excuse me. Yeah, or it's you know, just a single car accident or something, or even a vehicle in the ditch, depending on if you're in an area where it snows or something. But there are those times where you get those crazy ass, you know, suicidal calls, or it's a domestic that turns into a barricaded gunman, or it's a disorderly that ends up turning into a barricaded gunman. One of the calls that I can remember is it was late at night like that. There was nothing going on, not a thing. I mean, some of the calls that were coming in were just non-emergencies, you know, alarm calls, you know, just little piddly stuff here and there. And then one of our troopers ends up checking out at this address on the kind of the southwestern part of the county. And he says, I'm out here with so-and-so and we're going to be here because we're checking on a phone call that came into the post. This mom had called and said that her daughter was being held against her will by her boyfriend. But he made it sound like it might not be a big thing, as the caller was saying. So he said, we'll be 10-5. And 10-5, for those who don't know, it means that that they don't need any status checks. But per our policy, even though they say they don't need any status checks, we check them after 15 minutes. And he said they were 10-5. And I remember sitting there and looking at my supervisor at the time, because I wasn't a supervisor yet, but I was on radios. Actually, if I think about it now, my supervisor wasn't working. It was me and the rest of my team. She was off that night. Excuse me. So I'm at radios and I'm talking to the person on backup. And I said, you know, it's kind of weird that they're checking on a call like that, you know, somebody being held against their will and say that they're 10-5. And I said, but, you know, who am I to say? I didn't take the phone call from them. So it's probably, right, maybe it wasn't anything to really think about. Maybe it was, you know, a parent who was just kind of maybe they didn't like the guy or something. And, you know, they were taking it a little far. So they went 10-5. So we were just sitting there and it wasn't. Maybe 5 minutes into it, there's a key up for shots fired, officer hit.
Oh, wow.
And oh my God, we toned it out, code 7, and you know, all other traffic go to the other channel. We're keeping this traffic on this one, emergency traffic only. And the officers are hauling ass. So pretty much the whole county went to that spot to go and help them out. And that was one of those things where it's either one or the other. You didn't think, you know, it might not happen. And then this whole thing happens. The officer was shot in the hand. What had happened was, you know, he opened the door to go into the bedroom where they were at. And he saw the girl. And then when he looked as well, and the guy shot at him. Well, he shut the door as he saw the gun. So it was lucky that he had the fast reflexes enough to go ahead and shut the door, but he still got hit in the hand. The guy ended up getting arrested, but the girl didn't make it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She was, I guess, already gone, but that's the kind of shit that happens on night shift. It's freaking
especially
nuts.
If you're the magnet.
Right. There's always one person that's yes. the magnet that's working. That stuff is just nuts. But you know, even maybe not even more nuts, but something that a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about this week at this conference is how, you know, technology is, you know, it's so advanced now. 911 is trying to catch up, and 911 is catching up. It's catching up slowly, but it's catching up. And one of the things with technology and emergencies is on social media, you know, different types of social media that's going on. And there's actually a talk that I'm going to be helping out with on a panel tomorrow called Social Media Disasters and the PSAP. And for those who don't know what the PSAP is, a PSAP, P-S-A-P, P as in Paul, it's your public safety answering point, or otherwise known as a dispatch center. So we're talking about all of this stuff and this new technology. And Facebook, for those who don't know, they implemented something where they have AI, artificial intelligence, that can detect suicidal posts before they're reported. Now, this is either on the feed, people putting out posts, or especially for Facebook Live, because there was a time where there was a bunch of people who were actually doing that. They were going on Facebook Live and either going through with the whole suicidal act, or they were just being suicidal and, you know, everybody's watching. So they there's an article here on TechCrunch, which I'm going to end up posting on the blog post with this, where they talk about it. This is from November 27th of 2017, and it's an article that talks all about it, and it shows what it looks like. So on some of the pictures here, I know, Chris, you can't see it, but I'm getting to your part because you actually had an incident that came in with that has to do with this. It shows a cell phone, and it shows kind of a blurred out picture of someone, and it shows that it's Facebook Live. And if you're viewing it, something pops up and it says, so-and-so, we're reaching out to offer help. And, you know, there's some information on here, and there's other things that says, how can you help this person? And there's a whole huge thing that Facebook is doing, and how suicide reporting works on Facebook. Now, you and I were talking earlier today, and you guys actually had an incident that dealt with this. How did that whole thing work out?
Yes, we actually did, and I'm still not sure. Of course, you know how it works with 911. We don't necessarily get the closure
or the
understanding, especially in a traditional PSAP where we're moved away from the police departments and things like that. We're standalone, mm-hmm. So we interact with them. We're just not in the same building. But
right.
The call came in just like it normally would. Parent, I'm pretty sure the parent found the 15-year-old child, and we sent the responders, we sent the police, the fire, the EMS, everybody got there. Probably, I think the dispatcher that actually took the call, and I'll get into that because she done an excellent job. One of the ones that I was telling you about, less than 6 months experience, probably in the neighborhood of 4 months experience. But she was an EMT prior to that. Mm-hmm. She had an injury and had to come off the truck, so she wound up coming to work for me, and she did an excellent job. But going back to the story, you know, she's talking to the caller, getting the address, getting what's going on with the child, all the things that she needs to get, gets the responders there. The responders are there for, I don't know, somewhere between 2 and 5 minutes, and they notice the phone. And again, I don't know what platform of social media it was. We just assume something in the area of Facebook Live, maybe Instagram, one of those others that you can go live with.
Yeah, but Twitter's got Periscope, it could be any one of those.
They were on the video on the kid's phone, and they actually stopped the video. And then they came back, they told us that the whole thing had been recorded and broadcast out over some form of social media. But like I say, I don't really know which one it actually was.
Right,
That it actually happened, and it was a first for us in our center. And it makes you think. When you take that call, not only did I have that interaction with that family, but I just had that interaction over social media. How many people saw that? And the first thing in the lady's mind that took the call was, did I handle that right? And, you know, my thought to her was that 4 months on, getting a call like that, getting the people there and doing everything that you could, you handled it exactly how you should have. And she did an outstanding job with it. But then to have that whole thing with the Facebook Live, and then it being a younger child, and her having a child that's similar age. So I made sure to take her and talk to her about that and things, and she's doing fine with it now, but she had some issues once she found out the age.
Man, it's crazy to think about how far technology has come, even from the time that I was in dispatch, because I've only been out for going on 4.5 years now. It's not that long. And when I was dispatching, I thought I was the coolest because, you know, I was looking for people's phone numbers, and I would go into Facebook and put in a name, and I could find information off of social media. And I thought, we're the coolest. Cool. Yeah. We can do this. But now with like Facebook Live and Periscope and all this other stuff, there is so much more to it.
Yes.
And then, you know, you add in, you know, cyberbullying as well. And I mean, and that was another thing too, that we had not dealt with before. But when, you know, social media was really, really blowing up, we would get, I remember taking phone calls from people saying, oh, my baby's daddy or my baby's mama is threatening me on social media and stuff. And I would think, dang, this is pretty crazy. Now yeah. It's not just
it's an
finding someone.
Now, yeah.
Yeah. You're not just finding, like walking up to somebody or just, you know, you happen to see them in the grocery store and someone goes up and starts threatening or trying to fight them or something. Now it's online in an online
and it's
community.
Easy to do because there's a certain level of anonymity to it. I'm not face to face with you. I can say what I want to
right.
you. I can do what I want to you, and you can't really reach through there and do anything. But it still has those negative effects, probably more so than face to face bullying, because other people can jump on the bandwagon with it and make it even worse.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got you know, personal protection orders that are coming in from the judge, and everything is checked, including the, you know, the, what was it? It's like harassment through electronic devices or something like that.
We've not gotten that high tech in Kentucky. They just know Facebook contact and handwrite it.
See, but even that, I mean, how crazy is that?
But you have to do that. You
know? Right. And there were other things too that I found interesting where I would be putting in a personal protection order and I would look at both people. And they would both have them on each other, but they lived in the same home.
Yeah.
I don't understand that. How, so some of the boxes were, it wasn't, you had to stay away from the person for so many, you know, feet or whatever. It was more or less, you can't do electronic harassing and you can't do, you can't steal their belongings or whatever, but they live together.
Yeah. Go to one end of the house and I'll go to the other. It's like your mom put you in timeout when you're a kid.
Right. Oh, man, it's freaking nuts. And then, you know, your people have to deal with that that in dispatch. It's just nuts. Some of that stuff I guess it's not for me to get.
Yeah.
But moving on here, there is there's something that you've been working on, and I think it's an excellent idea. You've got, it's called the 911 Summit that mm-hmm. you have coming
yes.
up.
Yep.
Now, tell me more about that and how can people get involved?
Well, here's the thing. It's just an idea that kind of spawned off in the top of my head one day. Me and my wife were having a conversation, and you've met my wife.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a funny story about that after I tell you this.
Okay.
But anyway, long
and your
story
wife
short,
is very cool too.
We were sitting there, you know, talking, and I have been calling. I was an instructor. After I left the radio room, and there were some issues with why I left the radio room. Those folks from Kentucky will know that story and know why I left. But anyway, I have a bunch of friends in the industry in Kentucky where I was an instructor. And when I made the move from instructor to PSAP director, I found myself being out of the radio room for about 7-8 years. And that adjustment was pretty hard with the technology and different things. But the good thing about the radio room I went to is, even though I left almost 8-9, well, actually, if you count the time I spent in Frankfort for the state police, it's about 10 years I was out of the radio room.
Mm-hmm.
Same CAD. Walked back into the same CAD I left 10 years ago. Yeah. So
what?
Yes. Promise. Same CAD I left 10 years ago when I left the radio room to state police both. So. Not a big adjustment for me. I was able to come in, work the CAD, do the things that I needed to do and what I'd forgotten, came back.
Mm-hmm.
But other things, you know, like HR problems, hiring and retention, different things about writing an RFP for a new CAD. I found myself reaching out to several of my friends that, you know, I'd had in classes and that we work on the conference together in Kentucky for. So,
yeah.
You know, I found myself reaching out to several of those folks. And me and my wife were talking and we just came up with the idea. We were like, you know, if I'm doing this, other folks should be doing this. Why don't we just get in a room together and figure this out? And it started off as just a few friends sitting down. The idea started off as just a few friends sitting down to have a conversation and see where we needed to go, what we needed to do as a group, and then some of the things that, that came along out of it came into panel discussions and then came into folks coming to watch. And so far, the response has just been overwhelming. It's been live for maybe a couple of weeks on Facebook and things like that. And I keep getting emails, and all my speakers have committed. So it's going to happen. It's the 29th and 30th of March in my county. My county sponsoring the room is Cheap Training. As long as I can do that and put folks in front of me, you know, for a room rental at the local state park, I'm going to do that. And, you know, there's no cost to the folks that have to obviously provide their own lodging and their own meals. But other than that, they can come together. We can commingle. We can work together. We can network. And we can decide how, as directors in Kentucky, are we going to move into the challenges of next-gen 911, staffing, hiring, and retention, those things that we don't really have time to train for or do anything with because we're doing other things. And it gives us, you know, if you've had this problem, chances are I've got it.
Right. Yeah.
And we're half a state apart. How can we really meet together and fix that? Or how can we get those folks in the same room? And in training for the past 7 years or so, those are some of the best experiences I've had is peer to peer after the class. You know, I can show you what's on a PowerPoint. I can talk to you. I can explain it to you. But now you got to take what I taught you and go make it work back home.
Right.
How did you make it work? How did this person make it work? So how did you take those ideas or those concepts and make them your own? And that's kind of how that spawned. But, you know, now I guess I can go ahead and say it, but because he confirmed on this morning, but Ty Wooten asked if he could be part of that and speak on behalf of Nina and things like that. So I'm just overwhelmed at how much this has snowballed. And the folks in Kentucky that know me know training is my passion, and a lot of different things moved to get me there. Mm-hmm. Like the story that I told you about being deaf in one ear, and that's the reason I left the radio room.
Right, yeah.
Went through a lot of things to get that position as a trainer in Kentucky. And then I had to grow as a person to understand how to train because, like we said earlier, 911's a ball. And I've been in it over the past 20 years. But the person walking in off the street, I have 20 years worth of growing with 911. Person walking in off the street has no idea about 911. So I've got to recap 20 years.
Right.
And expect them to be at my level or at least some level that I can communicate with them, and it's just not there. And people write people off too soon because of that gap in training, that gap in education. I've got 20 years. I didn't learn all this today, 20 years worth of experience or 20 years worth of knowledge. It came over time. And I'm expecting a person to learn 20 years worth of my knowledge
in five weeks. You can't teach that.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And you have to be able to readjust what you do down on the level that they can understand it. And you know, I laugh when I would teach those academy classes. I would be like, you walk in here green off the street, and I could talk a different language to you, especially if you get them in like the NCIC class where we're talking acronyms.
Oh, geez.
I could have them run out of the room crying, you know, and never
I don't know what he's talking about.
Exactly. And we catch ourselves doing that. And we even talk to our family members that way. We go home and talk to our family members in 10 codes.
Yep.
Or change our vocabulary. I advise you to do this. Nobody advises anybody after work. We do that in work.
Oh,
we
right.
do it so often, it changes our vocabulary and the way we communicate. And then if you're doing that, you're doing that on the phone with your 911 caller. And when you use words that they don't understand and say things like calm down that never work, it just makes the situation worse. So one of the things I always tried to teach was communication, how to talk to people.
Right.
And that's one of the things the Lord blessed me with was the ability to do that and communicate and change my communication style to get my point across. And this is what the summit will allow us to do is talk about those things, talk about how, as a state, Kentucky's going to move forward.
See,
and how we can do it together.
And that's great because, it, you know, that's how all of this stuff happens. It starts out, you know, grassroots, just an idea, telling other people, sitting around, and then it, like you were saying, it snowballs. People started going and actually watching, and it gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
I'm getting to the point where I'm running out of room, and I'm trying to make that decision. Do I want to spend more money and get a bigger room to accommodate everybody, or do I want to start telling folks that they can't come and get folks that are interested that aren't in the level that, you know, the class was designed for, which it would be great to include everybody. I wish I could load everybody in 911 in Kentucky up and put them in one room together for 2 days. It would be great, but you can't. Somebody's got to answer the phone.
This
original one, you know, we're going to sit down as a group, as that group of directors that come together in the panels. Mm-hmm. This is my hope. And decide what we want to do for next year. Do we want it neutral, just us? Do we want to include other agencies? Do we want to include vendors to come? Because with Next Gen 911, we have no idea.
Right.
You know, we don't know what's out there, the Internet of Things, all that stuff that we're learning this week, everything that's going to call 911 on top of voice calls. How are we going to prepare for that? It's above our heads as director with all the as directors and PSAP managers for some of us, like myself. You know, I know how it's going to happen, but I don't understand the commingling of all those things. I've got to have somebody explain that to me. So if I can get a vendor involved and that's the direction we want to go, then that's what we're going to do. But this is exactly what I said it was on my website. It's for 911 by 911.
Nice.
Who else can bring the knowledge that you need other than folks in the chair? And even as an instructor, being out of the radio room for as long as I was getting ineffective. I could teach the leadership stuff and I could teach the basics, but as far as the technology, I'm ineffective at that. And it shows when I go back to my area now, to my job now, what I know versus what I don't know. And then one of the things I always said in class all the time is, in this position, I don't know what I don't know. I'm learning something new every day.
Right.
You know? And that's the kind of the thing with me. I get stagnant in some jobs. I like something that's always new, always different. I like to take a huge task or a huge problem and fix it or make it better. And that's kind of where I think I'm at in this particular point in my life. I'm trying to straighten this particular 911 center out and get it on the path to next generation 911.
Nice. Well, I see a lot of groups that are doing 911 summits like this. You know, for example, Adam Tim with the Healthy Dispatcher, as well as Nathan Lee with the Denise Amber Lee Foundation.
Nathan Lee's an awesome resource. Awesome.
Yeah, they did their 911 training summit, and they've got another one coming up in Amarillo, Texas, and then I think a couple more after that. One in Connecticut, and I'm not sure about the other one. But, you know, that's what's going on. There's a lot more of these, you know, summits that are happening, which I think it's good because now you'll be able to have more people attend and get a good education and stuff out of it, where, you know, a lot of the state conferences or the national conferences, dispatch centers aren't able to send all of their people out there.
Right.
You know, maybe one or two, if two, you know, but mostly one. But, you know, the smaller summits, it's a lot of good stuff. Going into the wrap up of this episode, this week, and actually this morning, we were in a class here at the SBP conference, and there was two classes. In the morning, there was a session called NG911 Operational Impacts on the PSAP, as well as the Future for 911 Professionals. And one of the things they mentioned in there with the way technology is going, you know, do we still call the dispatch center a PSAP, a public safety answering point? Because, you know, as they were saying it, it kind of makes it sound like, you know, they're just answering the phone there, where now with all the technology, it's way, way more. So one of the names, actually, the president of my company in digital, he had given two names because he was saying that because the dispatch center has now evolved to something way more than that, and the dispatcher has as well. He was thinking about ECC, or an emergency communications center.
That's what I've actually elected to go with mine.
Really?
I'm not a 911 center. I'm not even we're an emergency communications center.
Nice. And then what was your reasoning? Because that was going to be my question was, what's your opinion on changing the name, like fully, like a standard for changing that now that technology is really getting out there?
Several reasons, actually. And one of the things is PSAP limits us. You know, public safety answering point. All we do is answer the phone. We're asking for the federal government to define our job, define what we do, or accept us for what we do, but yet we label ourselves as just one thing.
Yeah,
we
an answering point. PSAP,
an answering point. You answer the phone.
That's a good. Yeah.
So, you know, that's the only thing we can really hang on, that we answer the phone. But as you know, sitting in that seat, you do so much more. And you do a lot more now. You said you've been out four, I've been out close to 10. So what they're doing now, a whole lot more than they were doing when I was there, and it was overwhelming then.
Right.
It seems like any new technology, any new task comes to the dispatch first. So those kind of things, you know, dealing with the technology, dealing with the answering, dealing, you know, watching videos, and there was mission this morning in the same block of almost taking on an analyst role. I don't think that's any different than anything that we've ever done before.
Right. Yep.
One of the things that you know, I've been working on is a class for myself, is teaching that. You know, I'm in the process of doing some things. I didn't know which direction my life was going. I knew that I needed to change from where I was at, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. So if this job hadn't come up, one of the things I was going to do was strike out on my own with the company to teach. actually watching a bunch of different things where the dispatcher actually got a piece of information that was pivotal in the actual interview with the police officer. And we're never highlighted like that. They go back and start watching those dots on Headline News all the forensic style.
Yep.
They refer back to the 911 call all the time.
All the time, yeah. I was just watching an episode the other day, yeah.
And when we were in San Antonio, we were actually watching one down there, and the dispatcher picked up on something. The door was supposed to be locked, but yet the person on the phone knew the condition of the person on the other side, that he was bleeding from a particular area, and she asked him, if the door's locked, how do you know that? So in the heat of the moment, they make mistakes. And then when they've got time to think about their story and line it all up later, then the detective has something to go on from that tape. So we've always been in that particular instance where we're the first person there, whether we have eyes on that scene or not. And we need to be thinking about the information that we're getting, how it fits into what it's ultimately going to be used for, instead of simply taking an address and the nature of the call and giving it to somebody else and not asking anything else. We've always been in that role.
Right.
We've just never been recognized of that analyst role. And, you know, we're always looking at we have the ability of CADs to tell our officers where to go patrol. This is your high crime area. Go sit here. This is where you're going to have your tickets. Go do saturated patrol here. We can do that. And, you know, in my particular PSAP, we do so much more. We have three police departments, an ambulance service, and eight fire departments, and a city fire department also. So we're doing all those things, plus that ambulance role. So PSAP is just a limiting term. It doesn't even get to the dispatch portion of it. I mean, you call it a PSAP, you're just answering the phone. So in an emergency communications center, you're doing all of these things, and you're communicating. You're giving that information out. Communication, to me, and what we've always taught, you know, in the academy back in Kentucky, DOCJT, is communication is the transfer of information with understanding. So that's what that is. You're getting the information, you're understanding why you're getting it, and what it's going to be used for.
Perfect.
And that leads to a better job. So until we do that, until we change those names, we're always going to be limited as what somebody else defines that term as. Like Chris Carver said this morning, we're worried about somebody else defining us instead of going out and making the definition for ourselves.
Exactly. Now, what about the 911 dispatcher? What about the dispatcher name? There was, and I don't think these were actually said in the session, but some that I've heard, or two of that I've heard, is either emergency communications specialist or emergency communications officer. And I had mentioned it to one of my coworkers, and I think before she left her PSAP, which was in Michigan, they had opted for emergency communications specialist is what they're using over there. So what do you think about that name change?
I think it has to happen. Dispatcher, again, you know, in our state, we went, the push was to telecommunicator. We went back calling them public safety dispatcher. In our academy in Kentucky, it's called the Public Safety Dispatch Academy. I like dispatcher, if I had to choose between the two, dispatcher better than telecommunicator, because telecommunicator to me is the person that gets hung up all the time, on all the time when they call the cell phone.
Right.
And it limits you to the telephone.
Yeah.
Which is a clerical duty. It doesn't mention the actual use of technology, use of radios, use of the other equipment that you have. The fact that you're manning multi-million-dollar systems, and you're basically the hub of control for everything that goes on in your city, public safety. Telecommunicator doesn't fit that role.
Right.
Neither really does dispatcher, because dispatcher is a trucking company, a train company, or a CAD company. You're moving things from point A to point B. We do so much more than that. So the specialist term, yes. Telecommunications, I'm not real sure, because again, you're limiting yourself to that one facet of what we do. And I like the term professional in it somewhere, because that's something that we lack in this particular profession. Nobody really has ever thought of it as a profession. Some of the same sessions, the problem was brought up. We get people who want to be police officers. That's how I originally got into this. I wanted to be a police officer, but I found out the human element of this job, made some connections with folks through calls that I had taken, and realized this is where God put me, this is where I need to be.
Right.
And I stayed on this side of the radio. Had a rewarding career for it, but you know, I've had a lot of things that I've taken home with me, a lot of things that I've second guessed, a lot of enemies that I've made over it for making right decisions and doing right things and the stuff that people do. But there's an ethics component to that too, so it's not just technical, it's not just telephone, but there you're trusting with a huge amount of information and the ethical implications of that. And then with text, video, all these other things that are going to touch 911, and the duty to take care of something when it does come into 911 doesn't fit telecommunicator, or doesn't versus professional because everybody thinks we have ESP. That was that went really well, but
yeah, exactly.
Professional kind of stuck with me, but you know we're multifaceted too, but we don't need to really attach ourselves with emergency services because that's either emergency management or EMS.
Right.
We have to define ourselves.
The ESP part was funny. I thought that was hilarious.
That was really good. But I have to say, you know, over these 20 years, 911 brought me a lot of things. And you know, I know we're wrapping up, but I promised you I'd tell you one more story.
Yes.
I met my wife, and 911 actually brought me my wife. And I promise you'll be rolling in the floor laughing. when I tell you how this happened, do you remember years and years ago the Nextel phones push to talk?
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Well, you weren't cool unless you had one of those.
Exactly, yeah.
So I had one. I guess I was cool. But I'm sitting in the radio room, and she's new to the area that I work in. This is when I work 911.
Yeah.
She's new to that town, and there's a Baptist-based college there, and she was going to that college. And her brother was on the rescue squad in the neighboring county, so that's how she wanted to meet people. She was used to that. So she got involved with the rescue squad. So they were all just goofing off the Nextel phone, and they put her up to putting a little four-digit number in there and hollering at me and just being goofy.
Yeah.
Well, I had a bad night going on in 911. I had a fatality wreck. I had a helicopter coming. I had all kinds of things going. Bad time to be playing. I don't know what the rescue squad was doing, but for some reason they weren't listening to the radio for the first time ever. Different department was out, but, you know, they weren't listening to everything else, you know, like rescue squads and fire departments do. They want to go.
Right, yeah.
Which is understandable, but they weren't listening for some reason. So they have her holler, and then I'm busy, so I'm kind of rude back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it keeps happening, but she's not doing it anymore, so the guys at the rescue squad are picking on me while this is going on. So I call her back on the Nextel and tell her if she keys up one more time, we'll have to get a warrant on her for harassing communications. Because this is a 911 dispatcher, and I am busy.
Right, yeah.
So after all that, and she actually answered that one. I mean, there was a lot more to it than that. I mean, I was pretty bad.
You were hot.
Yes, I was. And I found out that it was a joke, and they didn't really mean any harm. But some of the guys at the rescue squad had told me what happened. So long story short, I made a phone call to her, apologized for the way that I acted, and 12 hours later, we got off the phone.
What?
Yes, 12 hours later, we talked the entire time. It was the night before Easter in 2002. We talked here for 12 hours.
Holy crap.
Talked on the phone like that for about a week. It was one of those things, hey, you want to meet? No, I don't want to meet, you know, because you never know what you're going to meet when you actually meet somebody.
Right.
So, it could have been like that scene in Friday, you know, where she looks more like Freddie Jackson than she did Janet.
Yes.
So I had that quandary going on, so I finally got up the courage to meet her one night, and then long story short, we dated for about a year, year and a half, got married, and have been married for 16 years now. So.
Man, what are the odds of that happening?
I know.
Did you have unlimited minutes? Because I remember Nextel did not have unlimited plans at the time.
Remember.
Oh, but then again, if you guys talk for 12 hours on the push to talk. Yeah.
She actually called me on the you know, you have
on a landline?
Lines on the landline at 911, so she called me on one of those.
Okay.
That's the 12-hour phone conversation.
I was going to say, 12 hours going, hello, over.
Exactly. And no, it wasn't 12 hours like that, but just spent a lot of time on hold, and, you know, it was kind of neat. We've been through a lot together, and I can honestly say that, you know, 911 gave me my life. It gave me everything that I have in my life as far as where I came from, and, you know, I've got a lot to give back, and that's one of the reasons that I'm so emotional, and I'm so driven to do something and make a difference in this in any way that I can. And I feel like it was time to leave being an instructor because I have more to give on this side than I did that side. I'd reached my point where I was so far disconnected from the radio room, I really didn't have a lot to give. But now I'm back in there, and I can learn more, do more, and be more a part of that drive where we're going to go as a profession.
Perfect. That's awesome, man. And hey, 911 has done a lot for you, as you said. Your wife, your career. 911 needs many more people like you. So thank you for everything that you do and for being on this episode.
I appreciate it. We've been trying to do this for a while.
Yeah, we have. Finally got it in.
Yes, we did.
For those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you want to be a guest on the show, you can email us, and that's going to be WTT Podcast. Let me say that again, WTTPodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, and that's @911podcast. You can also like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/withinthetrenchespodcast. This episode is sponsored by the 911 Training Institute and is also supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. This episode can be heard 24/7 on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, SoundCloud, Google Play Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and thejabberlog.com. And one last thing, I made this announcement on Facebook yesterday, but if you're going to be on March 20th at the Iowa APCO conference, I'm going to be the closing speaker. I'm also going to be recording some episodes there, so make sure to check it out. You're going to learn a lot and also have your stories ready. And then the week of March 4th, I believe, is 4th through the 7th in Missouri. At that conference, I'm going to be the keynote speaker, and I'm also going to be doing the podcast there as well. So again, have your stories ready. It's going to be a good time. You're going to learn a lot about myself, my story, my 901 story, as well as the I Am 901 movement. So there's going to be a lot coming. And also coming soon, Imagine Listening, Your Worst Day is Our Every Day, Book 1. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.